This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 18th of August 2010, and tonight I'm happy to be joined on the line by Black Hats, a folk rock slash indie slash J-pop group based in Australia, who can be found at myspace.com/blackhats. Guys, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Hi, James.
Hello, James.
Hello, James.
All right, well, we obviously have three of you on the line here, so perhaps we should differentiate your voices. Why don't we start? I'll just introduce you, and you can just say hello. On guitar and vocals, there is Mr. Greg Nishimura Park.
Good evening, world. How are you?
On bass and vocals, we have Mark Jones.
Yeah, that's me. Hello, everyone.
And on drums and vocals, Mr. Jeremy Cook.
Hello, and ukulele, unfortunately.
All right, and I guess on our lead guitarist, Mr. Peter Watson, is missing in action, so we'll have to make do without him tonight. But let's start by finding out a little bit about you guys and your background. So how and when did you guys come together?
Well, we met probably about 24 years ago, I suppose. We were doing a musical called Lennon, about John Lennon. And from there, it was a lot of auditioning going on to get into that show, and they put a band together, and when the show finished, we sort of maintained contact and played in different bands ever since, actually, together.
But Black Hats has been going as a songwriting outfit for about, what, 3 years?
Yeah.
But you got together with a Lennon musical. Well, that's pretty cool. So that's 24 years ago.
Actually, my math is really bad. It was 1986, so we're talking, 20...
I think that's 24, yeah. Yeah, very good. All right, so for a band that lists your genre as folk rock slash indie slash J-pop, I guess it's safe to assume that you guys have a pretty wide musical range, and having sampled some of your stuff on MySpace and YouTube, I can certainly attest to that. So how did you guys develop your sound, and who are some of your influences?
Well, the sound is still evolving, I think, and especially we just added an old mate of ours, Peter Watson, on guitar this year. I mean, there are obvious influences from way back, you know, things like the Beatles and stuff. There's more recent bands like Danny Warhols, and I think everyone brings a lot of different things to the mix. But we were all kind of really into classic song-based rock, really, aren't we? Not heavy rock, yeah. And a lot of our songs have evolved around issues, if you like, or points of view. And so the vocals and lyrics are really important. But we put it into a very listenable format.
And what about the J-pop angle?
Well, the J-pop angle just came about by accident, because my wife was going through YouTube and listening to some great pop songs from the 1960s in Japan. Songs like Blue Light Yokohama, etc., Wolf Boy Ken, and we liked them so much that we just decided, as an exercise, to do a little EP of those pop songs, because those songs are so well crafted. They were written by very good songwriters back in the 1960s, and I've got to say, on YouTube, there's an absolute wealth of these videos there. Most of them taken off television, so the pictures are always really good. And the sound is really good too, and they've got tens of thousands of hits, these videos. So it was a real inspiration. And J-pop songs written in the 60s in Japan, which drew heavily on stuff like the Beatles from Europe, and also on blues and the Motown sound from America and that sort of stuff, and kind of fused it together and turned it into two minute 20 little gems.
Right, well, I'm glad to hear that, because I was worrying that you were talking about SMAP or something like that. I'm not a big fan of modern J-pop, let's say. But maybe that's just my biases coming through. But yeah, absolutely, there's some really good old Japanese pop that's really awesome. Well, am I to understand that there is some sort of Japanese connection with the band?
I'm married to a Japanese national, and her family lives in Kyoto, so we end up going back and forward there quite a lot. And it was through her friends, musician friends, who she went to college with, that actually brought the Black Hats back to Japan, because we had some contacts there to get in and do some shows. And so we thought, well, we'll just do it. And we made lots of new friends. But yeah, having a Japanese wife actually helps.
So where have you guys played in Japan so far?
Kyoto, Osaka, Wakayama, Taketsuki. I've actually played in a couple of lighthouses up in Kobe, and also in Tokyo as well, over the period of about the last two or three years.
Right. Okay. Well, the reason that I wanted to have you guys on the Corporate Report today was to talk about a track that you recorded recently during a live performance here in Japan, I believe, and that's a little number called Building 7. And I'm sure my listeners don't need to be told that Building 7, of course, refers to World Trade Center Building 7, the third building to collapse in the afternoon of 9/11, a 47-story steel-framed office tower that was not hit by any airplane, and one that we are told by the National Institute of Science and Technology spontaneously collapsed into its own footprint at freefall gravitational acceleration because of thermal expansion caused by regular office fires. And they are now refusing to release the data from their computer model, which apparently shows the physical possibility of such an incredibly unlikely event, because it would jeopardize public safety, quote-unquote. As I say, my listeners don't need any introduction to this topic, because I've mentioned it on the podcast numerous times, but nonetheless, it is really exciting to hear some a band coming out with this type of content in their song and bringing this knowledge to the wider world. So it's really good to see this filtering out into general pop culture. How did you guys come to learn about Building 7, and why did you see fit to write a song about it?
Well, I think when September the 11th actually happened, it was 11 o'clock midnight here, so it had a bit of an effect on all of us. But the song really came about when I was trying to, in fact, write a completely different song, and I wasn't having much success. So I just thought, oh, I'll just take a walk around my backyard. And I just started humming this tune to myself, and these words, and all just came out in the space of like 10 minutes. And so I quickly sort of came back and wrote it down. And so we had the beginnings of it that way. But I was always intrigued, as you said, that there seems to be two conflicting versions of what actually took place on that day, especially, the owner of the building claiming that he suggested that they actually pull the building down. So that seems to be a contradiction from the other thing that you were talking about. And as I always say at the start of the song when we play it live now, is that in the history of steel frame buildings, not one has collapsed due to fire, and that includes on September the 11th. 2001.
Absolutely, yeah. Just a physical impossibility that just happened three times on the same day. Funny how that works. So what kind of response have you been getting to this song so far?
Well, it's been pretty positive so far.
There seems to be a lot of comments coming in, and some of the ones on YouTube, in terms of the song, are saying, people like Simon and Garfunkel and Bob Dylan used to write songs about this sort of stuff years ago, but they don't do it anymore. And I mean, I think, we can remember back to times of that, and people like, I can still remember, Neil Young doing Ohio. They used to play these songs on regular radio, and of course they don't really do that anymore.
Right. But that's an astute point, because you do think of I guess Neil Young might have been sort of the last of the generation. But obviously, when you think back to the 60s, so much of the music and the pop culture of that time was infused with the politics. And now there's just such a wedge between the politics and the music that you really don't see a lot of this anymore.
No. People, you can run them off, John Lennon, Bob Marley, even Stevie Wonder. They've all got those kind of lyrics in their songs from place to place, not sort of in every song, but it is a general reminder to people just not to forget, and a song just doesn't go away. They had a thing in the paper just a couple of weeks ago about that song, about Ohio and how it was written and what it was about.
Right, and the thing that I noticed about this song is that it you say it came to you as you were just sort of out walking and you were sort of humming the melody, and I could see that. It is such a sort of hummable song. I found it myself humming it to myself all day. So, I mean, there's definitely, it's a catchy song, and I think that there's obviously something very powerful about that, putting just a sort of almost, to use the sort of current term, I guess a Googleable term, in people's consciousness with just sort of a little melody like that. It's almost like a little advertisement for a piece of truth, and just such an effective tool. So so what do you guys think about sort of using music to make a message or to get a message across to people?
Well, it's a really potent way to get it across. It's not like a lecture. And it is, you know, if you get the melody right, you can hum it along. When the first song we did together was about the race riots at Christmas in Sydney, but we did it, called Surf's Down, but we did it to a raging surf beat with a sort of a Good, the Bad and the Ugly sing-along whistle intro at the front, but the lyrics are quite pointed.
Right, sort of slipping truth in the back door. I love that kind of thing, and I think that is probably one of the most effective ways of getting that message out to people who otherwise would not be interested in it, because there is a certain percentage of the population that's just not going to independently be researching this type of thing for themselves, but might encounter it through music. So I think it is just such an incredibly effective tool. Have you guys done this type of thing before? Are there other songs that you could point to that you've included some political message in?
Oh, we've got a few. Well, we've got one song called Okinawa Cowboys, and that's basically about the bass in Okinawa. And once again, with the songs, we don't write we're not writing a big essay about the song. You keep it fairly simple and keep it fairly open so people can use their own imaginations and their own sense of it. So, you know, it's not like you have, hey, listen, mate, I don't have to paint a picture for you, do I, sort of thing, you know. Got songs about Indigenous people here in Australia. And usually these songs come from, you know, where we've personally been touched in our own lives by these things or found things that have really affected us. And Okinawa Cowboys, I just started writing that a couple of years ago. And we've been playing it and that sort of thing. It's a great little song to play. And the response that we've got in Japan, and because it's got lyrics in it like... it's time, you know, your family's waiting home, boys, you know, time to pack your toys, boys, have you seen your son, leave those girls alone, boys, take your bombers home, boys, time to cut and run. But it's a big raging rock song, you know, and Marky's written another great little song called Ooga Booga Boogie, which has got kind of quite satirical lyrics.
Yeah, that's the one about the what's the byline for that one? The spin cycle that helps keep us all on task.
Because it always seems to be, you know, it's like when you look around. First off, it's swine flu, and now we've got something else, and you know, now they're going on about the jet stream stalling over the top of Asia, there causing massive floods and huge devastation in Pakistan, and probably floods in China as well, and. Somebody's actually come out and said, we think it's a secret weapon. They're using a secret weapon to affect the weather, you know.
Right. I think I just read briefly about that today. I think that was a Russian official, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the Russians, I really don't know what these people are. You know, next year will mark the 10th anniversary of 9/11. 10 years. It's been 10 years and untold misery has been visited on people from all walks of life, religions, nationalities, all around the world for the last 9 years. If you go back to the Gulf War, nearly 20 years. And some people have made a lot of money out of it. Some people have made a lot of money out of it and done really well, and they don't want it to stop. And, you know, you can have politicians up there. We've got an election in Australia this weekend.
Next Saturday.
And basically, you know, you look at the parties that are on offer, the Liberal Party and Labor Party, and, you know, I've voted Labor most of my life and that sort of thing. These guys, they really are two sides of the same coin. And really what, you know, you can vote politicians in and out of office, you can write them letters, and in reasonable democracies you can go and stand in front of Parliament House and wave a placard around there to protest. It's not those guys that are the guys that you should be looking at. It's the lobby groups, the ones who are behind them. The ones who are giving the parties money, you know, and that's on a high government level, right down to a local council level. You know, in our area here, they need work to do on a hospital, and they've got pubs that stay open 24 hours, and they want to close them. And AHA, the Australian Alehouses Association, as it turned out, you know, kicked in $600,000 into the Labor Party's election fund. They also kicked $600,000 probably into the Liberal Party's Labor fund as well. And you think, why didn't you take that? $600,000 and go and stick it into the Mona Vale Hospital or something like that, or, you know, a bit of job creation for some young people or older people, you know. It's really frustrating, and sometimes I personally have to step back from that, and the way to step back from that is into music, because you can actually go, okay, well, you know, between us, between the three guys here, we've played thousands of shows all over the world. We've done lots of music, and we've seen it to be a strong healing force with people. So the only thing, as Bob Marley says, you know, when the world's full of evil, there's only one thing you can do, and that's you can only just do good, you know. That's all you can do, mate, you know, because we're just little ants running around here. We're nothing. And, you know, you can vote, but it doesn't make any difference, really.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think it's unfortunate to think that there's a generation growing up, of which I'm probably, I guess, even a part, that really doesn't understand or doesn't see anymore how subversive rock and roll music was when it first came along, and how it was truly threatening to the system in a lot of ways, and how people like John Lennon ended up on the, you know, Nixon enemy list and things because they dared to speak out on issues like this. And now just the thought of having an artist that dangerous to the power structure is almost laughable. I mean, there's just no one that really compares to that right now. So I think people have to support this when they see it. I mean, obviously there is a lot of this going on in the independent scene, but not a lot that takes place in mainstream garbage anymore.
No, and the music industry, in terms of playing music, it's a different world to what it was now. Like here in Sydney, it's very, you know, live gigs are pretty much all gone. You know, they're encouraging people really not to go out, you know, stay home and we'll just feed you what you need to be fed through the television. I still think one of the greatest films ever made is the movie Network with Peter Finch and William Holden.
Faye Dunaway.
It's just got, couple of other great actors, but it's just got so many fantastic lines written in it that are just so spot on for today, you know. And one of them is that Howard Beale's actually saying something like, you know, I just want my pop-up toaster and my steel belt radials and my TV set, and I promise I won't make any noise, just leave me alone, just leave me in my little house here, and I won't make any noise, I'll just go to work and that sort of thing. And, you know, he said, but I want you to get up and I want you to be angry and so forth and so on.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
That's right. But, you know, look what happened to him. He got shot. You know, they took him out.
Yeah, it seems to be a recurring theme almost. Yeah. Well, so Building 7 was a live performance. I guess you guys haven't recorded a studio version of that yet?
No, but we are planning on doing that in the very near future.
Excellent. Well, I think that would probably be quite a hit, at least among my listeners. So how many albums do you guys have?
We've got one that we've actually released as our first proper one, but we have a preemptive album, which we brought out about 2 years ago now, called Back Blackouts. And there were some other points of view songs on songs, and that we did a song about, you know, the wheat board scandal in Australia with the kickbacks for the Iraqi.
Right. Was that right, to do with the oil for food?
Yeah. Thing? The one, yeah. That was one of our point of view songs. We called it the average wheat board, and it was about the guy, Trevor Flug, who was the chairman, who was an interesting character. We just thought, gee, poor old Trevor's out of a job now.
Yeah.
What would it be like looking at the world through his eyes back in Australia, going through the want ads, you know? So that was on that one. Other points of view songs, guys. We got Bozo Creep, which is about insidious mediocrity rising to the top in office culture, which is maybe a little obscure for a pop song, but we made a pretty good little surf beat out of it.
That sounds very interesting.
Well, the whole thing is, I think if you put these words, if you look at YouTube and you look at our demographic, you know, the little what do they call it? Eyesight on YouTube?
Insight
on YouTube. And I was sort of looking at our demographics, and our sort of demographics at one stage there, we were picking up lots of people from about 40 years of age and over. These are people who are in our age bracket who've probably seen it all and are identifying with it. So one of the things that we found, and this is one of the promoters in Japan who was talking about getting us work there to play there in Japan and playing some pretty good gigs too, was about the demographic thing. He said, you know, we put you with a younger band and that sort of thing. But what your music is, it's got a very strong nostalgic feel because of probably our pedigree, where we come from. And that has a really strong appeal to older people. And your lyrics are really new and contemporary, which is also interesting because people are interested in new stuff. So you've got this thing of like a nostalgic sound with contemporary lyrics. So that could work for us.
I can definitely see that. I could imagine anyone from a baby boomer on up finding something of value in there. But maybe, I don't know, maybe you guys aren't so popular with the grandparents. I don't know.
But I've just become a grandparent.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, the thing you got to keep in mind about YouTube demographics is that everyone lies on their YouTube profile. So that skews up the demographic. Everyone says they're 99 years old or whatever. So.
Wow. Oh, no. I believed it. You see, I've been sucking again, guys.
Well, the other thing, of course, is that this band really that we have now, since Peter only joined the band in February, we're really only sort of 6 months old. So we have actually booked some studio time for next month, and we are planning to sort of make another CD, but with all four of us, which will be a first. So, you know, really the band is quite new, but we're really excited about our future prospects.
Well, that is exciting. So I assume there'd be an Australian tour, obviously, after that, and maybe heading out to some other countries? Japan, maybe?
Well, we'd love to come back to Japan, that's for sure.
We'd love to come back to Japan, yeah.
And then maybe over to Europe, although we have had offers of somebody from the was it the film festival, Marky, the one in
the NorCal 9/11 film festival.
Mm.
There's a character over there who's the executive producer, and he's going to run that Building 7 film clip somewhere in amongst all of that.
Awesome. Well, that's very exciting to hear. So, for people who haven't seen this, maybe we should fire out your YouTube address.
Well, that's www.youtube.com/blackhats. That's BLAKHATZ. Yes. Z for those of you in the States.
Yes, right. Yeah, pretty easy to remember. And myspace.com/blackhats as well. We'll get you to the MySpace account. Very cool. So I guess the inevitable wrap-up question to all music interviews, what's in store for Blackhats?
Well, a new CD, I think, is our next port of call, really, don't you think, guys?
Absolutely, and some shows now that we've actually got the band up to, road speed, as it were.
Mm. Their little trip to Japan was very, very, very good and rewarding exercise. We really enjoyed playing at the live houses there and the people who came along. And what we also found at Japanese gigs that we liked over there was there were strollers turning up. There were young people or young families with little kids turning up to some of these shows. So, and also young teenagers who were musicians who wanted to come and talk to us afterwards about playing music and that sort of stuff. You don't really get that here in Australia because of the licensing. Alcohol and all that sort of stuff, but you can do it in Japan. So, looking to make new friends.
Yes.
Right. Well, it's a great place to be. So, I certainly hope next time you guys are around, maybe we can do an interview in live and in the flesh. Very
exciting.
That would
be absolutely fantastic.
Cool. All right. Well, it's great to talk to you guys tonight, and absolutely all the best of luck on your new album. And drop me a line when it's out, and I'll make sure my listeners find out about it.
Thanks very much, James.
Thanks very much for your interest. That's fantastic.
All the best.